I dropped down to sit on the bed, laying my sword aside. It was nice to be out of my boots. I wasn't foot sore from wandering through the stone-floored bazaar, but it was close. I wriggled my toes with relief. Jaframel closed the door. His golden hand spread against it for a moment, and his head bowed. I dug in my bag.
Jaff?
Hey.
He didn't move. Stood with his head down, his eyes closed, leaning his entire weight against his hand on the door. His shoulders slumped as if he was tired.
Jaframel?
I saw no complex twisting of power that would tell me he was performing a work of magic. Saw nothing but the same black diamond glitter of his aura, hard and impenetrable, shouting his essential difference.
He's demon. He isn't human.
I'd almost forgotten that before. Still, I couldn't help trying to get through to him. He looked back over his shoulder, his face arranged in its usual ironic mask, and his shoulders coming back up to their accustomed straight line.
You should rest, Dante.
Come on over. I patted the bed next to me. I lowered the bag with my most important purchase in it to the floor. I'd bought another small statue of Anubis to replace the one I'd lost. This one easily able to fit in my palm and carved out of a single chunk of black marble veined with gold. The other thing that mattered, the statue of Sekhmet, repaired with infinite care, sat on the bedstand, glassy obsidian, glowing mellow.
Please.
He crossed the room slowly, lowered himself down.
Close your eyes.
He studied my face for a long few moments before complying. I undid the clasp and leaned close. I settled the sapphire against his coat and fiddled with the clasp, my fingers suddenly clumsy. It took a while, and when I retreated, I found he'd opened his eyes. He looked at me like I'd just done something extraordinary.
There. I think it suits you.
He said nothing. A little bit of the good mood slipped away, then a little more. He examined my face, his eyes moving from my forehead to my mouth to my cheeks to my chin to my eyes, and then repeating the process again.
Great. He doesn't like it. He probably doesn't like me very much either right now. If he'd just listen to me.
Shame rose inside me.
Rebuffed by a demon. A new low even in my dating life.
If you don't like it, I...
No. It's beautiful, Dante. Thank you.
I wondered if he was going to hurt me again, and kept his hands in view. He could move with eerie, blurring demon speed, but I might still have a little warning if he decided to get nasty with me again. It didn't take much sometimes to tell what he was feeling. You only had to look closely enough to see the tiny changes. A millimeter's quirk to the eyebrow, a fractional lift of a corner of his mouth, a slight flaring of one elegant nostril.
Why does this hurt so much?
You don't sound happy. Did I just violate some arcane demon protocol by giving you a present?
He shook his head. I waited. Got nothing else.
Fine.
I turned away, grabbed my bag strap and my sword and slid off the bed. Patted around to the other side. And plopped back down onto my back. My bag settled against my stomach. I clasped my sword in my hands.
Take it off and burn it if you don't like it. I don't care.
After all, you held me up against a wall and lied to me. You're a bastard. Why can't I hate you?
Tears blurred my vision and I closed my eyes.
What would you have me do?
Give a little. Tell me what's going on. Don't lie to me. Quit manhandling me when I don't do what you want. And for the sake of every god that ever was, quit being so... so...
Inhuman? Is that the word? How many times must I tell you that I will act to protect you? I will not bother you with trifles. You need only obey my requests, Dante, and this will be easier.
Obey? What, are you gonna start beating me like a pimp beats his favorite hooker?
Don't hunt Eve. Please. If you ever cared about me at all, don't do it.
I will not risk you in a rebellion doomed to failure. The androgyne is young, untested. She cannot win, Dante. I will not lose you to her foolishness. Why will you not understand?
The injustice rose to choke me. I swallowed it, tried again.
You don't have to declare yourself on her side. We can look anywhere in the world for her, Jeff. We just don't look too hard. In 7 years, the contract's over, we're free, and you—
How free do you think the prince will leave us if these four are not caught and brought to his justice? It is a choice between them and us. They will die, or we will. And if she has clouded your head with some appeal or treachery, it becomes my task to save you from yourself.
Silence. Outside, the sun was sinking below the arc of the horizon, and night reached up to fold ageless desert and ancient city in its embrace.
You want to save me from myself, and you'll hurt me if I don't do what you want. Is that it?
I am sorry. I am a fool.
Huh. Chalk it up to a miracle. He sounds sorry for once.
I do not mean to hurt you. You do not understand, and it frustrates me past all reason when you will not listen, will not see. When the escaped are brought to Lucifer's justice, you may extract whatever penance you desire from me. Until then, we are at war. It is us or it is them, and I will not have it be us.
It's not a choice between them and us, dearest Jaffermel. It's your choice between me and Lucifer. I guess I know where your real loyalty lies.
If it pleases you, continue to think so.
He rose.
When this is finished, I will ask an apology for that accusation.
I would have cursed him out, but he closed the door to the bedroom before I could. I settled down to brood before we had to catch the transport. It was with profound relief that I stepped onto the concrete dock. I filled my lungs with soupy, chemical-laden tang, the familiar cold radioactive glow of Saint City's power well rising to greet me.
God damn, it's good to be home.
Lucas jostled me from behind. Leander worked the kinks out of his neck.
Damn transport.
I felt sneakingly glad my own claustrophobia was shared by at least one member of our little troop. I looked over my shoulder. To the side, out of ear reach, Jaffermel murmured to McKinley, who had shown up on the transport dock at midnight in Cairo, along with Tian's. The Nichtren left to help Van with whatever errand Jaffermel had sent him on, and the black-clad Hellesfront agent had boarded the transport with us. I didn't like that. The man, if you could call either Van or McKinley a man, made me nervous. The oddly silver metallic coating on his left hand puzzled me too. I didn't have the faintest idea what the Hellesfront agents were precisely, but they were part of the net of financial and other assets the demons had in place on Earth. Van had said something about vassals. Maybe they were organized into a feudal system like some federated free towns. Which meant that Van and McKinley were loyal to Jaffermel, if they weren't exclusively loyal to Lucifer. Either way, neither of them was likely to be any help to me, or to give me any information. The Nichtren didn't seem very likely to help me either, which left me with Lucas, Leander, and my own wits.
Put that way, I seem damn near rich. The Deathless and another necromancer are far from the worst backup I could have. Of course, I am dealing with demons. All the backup in the world might not be enough.
As I watched, McKinley nodded and set off for the other end of the dock, apparently given his marching orders. Jaffermel watched him for a moment, but the mark on my shoulder was alive with heat. No matter that he was looking the other way, Jaff's attention was all on me. I wasn't quite sure how I felt about that.
Lucas,
Two
things. Find out what Jaffermel's business in Saint City is, and tell Abra I'll be coming by to see her.
You got it.
He melted into the crowd. It was a relief to have a professional in my corner. Whatever Jaff was up to, Lucas was my best bet of finding out. And sooner rather than later. Leander raised an eyebrow as Jaframel approached us.
I have a job for you too, Leander. Just wait.
Take your time.
He sounds like Jace.
The thought of Jace pinched hard deep in my chest, in a place I'd thought was numb.
Guess it isn't so numb after all.
First things first, though. Can you get us a cab?
All things should be so easy.
He loped away to find and reserve us a hover cab in the queue that would be waiting outside along Beaumartin Street. When Jaframel reached me, his fingers braceleted my left wrist. I controlled the nervous twitch. That was the hand holding my katana as usual.
Does he think I'm gonna run now? Especially when he knows I would only go to Gabe's, a place he's been before?
McKinley will search for information and find us accommodation. I thought that would please you.
There was no sign of the necklace I'd given him, and I had too much pride to ask what he'd done with it. Instead, I tried to pull my wrist out of his hand and got exactly nowhere, though his fingers were gentle.
There's no need for this. We should get going.
I feel a need.
His thumb stroked once across the underside of my wrist. Fire spilled up my arm again. I tugged harder. Achieved nothing. He might not be hurting me, but he wanted me to stay put.
This is unwise, Dante. I am not to be trifled with at this moment.
What the hell? Sigmatsias, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm not the one who's trifling. You're the one who won't tell me a damn—
I will tell you something now. I never knew dissatisfaction before I met you, Hedera. The only time I feel any peace is when you are safe and I am near you. Be careful who you spend your smiles on, and be careful of what you make of me. I am seeking to be gentle, but frustration may make me savage.
In all the time I'd known him, he had never said anything even remotely like this.
You mean more savage than you already are?
I pulled against his hand again. I might as well have been chained to the dock.
You have no idea of the depth of my possible savagery. I tell you again, be careful. And again, I do not expect your forgiveness or understanding. I require only your cooperation, which I will get by any means I deem necessary. We are here to see what is so urgent with your necromance friend, well and good. But do not taunt me.
Taunt you?
Taunt you? I'm not the one who keeps playing manipulative little games here, Jaff. It's you and Lucifer who have the corner on that one. Let go of me. Let go of me.
He did. I stumbled. The release of tension against my arm was so quick. I opened my eyes. The world rushing back in to meet me, and lifted my left hand slightly. The katana's weight was reassuring. I started walking.
We've got a cab to catch. Unless you're going somewhere else.
He didn't dignify that with a reply. It was probably just as well. Gabe's house crouched on Trivisadero Street, behind high walls her great-great-something-or-other had built. Her family had been cops and necromancers for a long time, passing along talent and training in a haphazard way before the awakening and the parapsychic act. They had survived because they were rich, and because they did everything possible to blend in before the act made it possible for scions to come out of the shadows. I deliberately did not look when we passed over the block that held a huge pile of stone with high holly hedges and walls. Aaron Helm's house, where I'd begun to figure out just what nightmare had risen from the depths of Rigor Hall. I didn't want to see if Helm's house still stood. The first shock was that the neighborhood had changed. The winds of urban renewal had swept through what had once been a bad part of town. I saw several little boutiques and chic eateries, as well as other restored homes. The second shock, when we got out of the hover cab and Jaframel paid the driver, was that the shields over Gabe's walls had changed. I caught Jaframel's arm. He stilled, looking down at me. Leander stood on the corner, his eyes moving over the street and probably marking it in his memory. It was the same thing I did in an unfamiliar city.
Her shields are different.
Look, can you and Leander wait for me?
Dante, you...
I give you my word I won't go anywhere but into Gabe's house. I promise I'll come back out to you. I swear. But please, Javermel, this is private. Don't make me beg you over something like this.
I can't stand begging you over something so simple. I can't stand begging you at all.
You do not have to. An hour, no more. Or I will come in for you, Dante, and I will demolish her precious shields. If I even think you may be in danger or seeking to escape me, I will do the same. Is that clear?
Crystal.
Shit, when did you get so arrogant?
I drew in a sharp, deep breath, flavored with the smell of dusk in Santiago City. The taint of chemicals, damp and mold rising from the ground, the tang of the sea, and the further iron-rich smell of the lake to the east. I moved away across the sidewalk and stepped up to Gabe's gate. I brushed against her shields, a familiar touch, and realized what was wrong. The shields Eddie had put up, the spiky, earth-flavored magic of a skinlin, were fading rapidly, as if they'd been mostly dismantled and left to shred away from the other defenses. Eddie and Gabe had been together so long, they seemed eternal. Her shields flushed red as I laid my hand against the gate. The lock clicked open as Gabe's work recognized me. I pushed at the gate before it could close again and stepped through. The gardens were another shock, full of weeds. Eddie had always kept them pristine. Of course, a dirt witch's trade is in his garden. Skinlin are mostly concerned with growing things. Like hedge witches, but hedge witches are more interested in using plant material to accessorize spell work. Skinlin are the modern equivalent of kitchen witches. Most of them work for biotech firms, getting plants to give up cures for mutating diseases and splicing together plant DNA with sonic magic or complicated procedures. Their only real drawback is that they're berserkers in a fight. A skinlin in a rage is like a chill freak. They don't stop even when wounded. Eddie was fast, mean, and good. I never wanted to fight him. I trudged up to the front door as night began to breathe in the garden, more disturbed than I could have ever admitted. The mark on my shoulder pulsed steadily like a heartbeat. Javermel, keeping contact with me the only way he could.
Is it the only way he can? I've heard his voice inside my head before. Been able to call him without words.
The thought froze me on the step, my hand raised to knock on Gabe's red-painted door. The house simmered above me, three stories of brownstone with even more shielding wedded to its physical structure.
Can I detect it if Javermel is inside my mind right now? A thin shadow under my thoughts?
The idea called up a nervous flare of something close to panicked loathing.
Communication's one thing, but thinking the cubic centimeters inside my skull might not be wholly my own is...
You learn early that your body betrays you. It's your mind that has to stay impregnable.
Polyamor's voice. I pushed the thought away. The door opened. Gabe regarded me with her dark eyes. The final shock was the worst one, I think. The one that made the world go gray and the mark on my shoulder smash with pain. My emerald burned on my cheek, answering hers. Gabriella Spocarelli, necromance and my friend, had aged. The house smelled of dust, and I saw, well, there were toys scattered through the hall. Toddler's toys. Blocks and small hover cars made of primary-colored, non-toxic plasilica. Other things. A small shoe lay in one corner of the kitchen.
She hadn't said anything about a kid during the phone calls. Not a single word. Not even a hint.
Gabe's long dark hair was threaded with gray since she'd stopped dyeing it, and the wrinkles fanning from the corners of her eyes spoke of frequent smiling. She was still slim and strong. Shorter than me, and with an air of precision I had envied so many times. I wondered if she still carried her longsword. a piece of sharp metal far too big for her. When I'd been human, I often thought I never wanted to face her for real over that steel. She was capable of cool, clinical viciousness not many other fighters possessed. She'd been a cop all her life, going from the academy into the Saint City PD, fighting the good fight. She wasn't old, not by any stretch, but being a cop had marked her, turned her hair prematurely gray. That gray alone told me volumes. For Gabe to go against codes and not dye her hair black was either exceeding vanity or a sign she wasn't working professionally anymore. She still moved with the ease of combat practice and flexibility, but there was a slight stiffness, a shadow of slowness that hadn't been there before. She had graduated from the academy a full 5 years ahead of me, one of the few scions to have taken a break between primary training at Stryker and entering for her accreditation. She'd spent those years in Paradise becoming a cosmopolitan, then had come dutifully home and done what her family had always done, gone through advanced schooling, taken her trial, and settled into being a cop. We'd been friends a long, long time. I sat at the old breakfast bar, looking at the fall of fading sunlight through the kitchen window, and felt the full consciousness of time settle in on me. She had aged, and I hadn't. I still looked the same as I had when I opened my eyes in a Nuevo Rio mansion to find a demon had fallen and shared his power with me. My hair was shorter, true, but otherwise I was the same, on the outside. They were only tiny changes, the lines on her face and the threads of gray in her hair.
If I'd stayed in Saint City, I probably wouldn't have even noticed.
How long has it been?
You've lost track? Oh, of course. You disappeared. And time's not your strong suit.
I opened my mouth to defend myself. Shut it. I had disappeared. With Jaframel, and she didn't know. We'd settled in Toscano, and I'd buried myself in decoding Magi shadow journals, searching for the clues that would tell me what I was, because he would not. I thought it was a matter of embarrassment. Most demons are very touchy about the whole subject of the Fallen, and I thought perhaps Jaff didn't want to speak of something painful and degrading. Now I wondered.
Only a couple of years. Don't worry, Danny. I understand as much as I can. I saw you after the Lord's case, remember? You were dead on your feet, Sunshine. I'm just glad to see you now.
You called. Monathus. Of course I came.
Her back stiffened as she faced the kettle on the stove.
I wasn't sure you would.
You know me better than that.
Or at least you should.
You and your damn sense of honor. Look, there's two things I want from you, Valentine. I'll make you tea, and we'll talk.
Where's Eddie? I can't imagine him leaving her.
I stayed silent. She'd tell me what she wanted. She would either solve the mystery or not. If not, it would be obvious she didn't want to talk about it. And the least I owed Gabe was a measure of tact. If anything happened to her, the last person who remembered my human self, truly remembered my human self, would be gone. Chamomile tea for me, in a long, black, sinuous mug, familiar enough to make a funny melting sensation begin under my breastbone. Chai for her, in a new mug, a sunshine yellow one.
That's a change. She usually isn't a sunshiny yellow type of person. I wonder if it's having a kid that does it. Okay, where is the little person who plays with the toys, Gabe? And why didn't you tell me? This qualifies as major life news. I would have liked to have been here for that.
Of course, I hadn't ever hinted I was living with a demon who had resurrected himself from ash either. Did one secret balance out the other? She leaned against the breakfast bar, her fingers clasped around the tea mug. I saw the beginnings of a papery dryness on the fragile skin on the back of her hands, and felt that melting sensation again.
No questions? Nah, you wouldn't ask me a damn thing, would you? You'd wait for me to tell you, or never mention it if I didn't. Hades, I forgot what it was like to talk to you.
She turned away, stalked across the kitchen, and scooped something up from the cluttered counter.
That clutter's new, too. Her house has always been neat.
Dishes were stacked in the sink, A few hollow mags scattered across the far end of the breakfast bar, and dust lay on the counter next to me.
I hope it's pleasant.
Sometimes.
She tossed a file folder onto the counter in front of me.
I want you to help me kill whoever did this.
I realized she was holding on to her serenity by the thinnest of threads.
Okay.
I opened the folder.
Consider him dead, Gabe.
I would have agreed to it because I trusted her. I also would have agreed to it because looking at the first sheet in the folder, a nice, glossy laser print showed a body lying on a white floor, a rack and ruin of shattered glass winking up and dusting the blood that had dried sticky, spreading out in an impossibly large stain. But what drove the breath from my lungs was the face at the top of the ruined mass of flesh.
Eddie.
It was his body, indisputably dead. The experience of many other murder scenes rose under my skin. I noted the bullet holes clinically. Projectile weapons, a good way to take out a raging Skinlan. His shaggy head, the arc of his cheekbone as his chin was tipped back, the dark blonde whiskers telling me he hadn't shaved for a day or so before his death.
When?
10 days ago.
She's using anger like a shield against the shock of loss.
I knew that territory. I'd seen it when Doreen and later Jace died. Then there was the terrible almost year I'd spent mourning Jaframel as he lay dormant, ash in an urn. I remembered the abyss of loneliness and black despair, the mind bumping up against the single word, gone. Because the word dead was too final. No matter that death was my trade. We all think we're immortal, even necromancers.
But necromancers should know better.
We never do.
There's one more thing, before you agree.
Too fucking late, I've already agreed. Monathus.
She reached down under the counter as if she was digging in her pocket, and brought out another small piece of paper. I took it, and found myself looking down at a lace print of a beautiful little toddler with Gabe's dark eyes and Eddie's wild blonde hair, wearing a pair of denim overalls and grinning up without a care in the world. Behind her, the green of a laurel hedge writhed.
This is who's been using the toys.
The world had indeed changed while I'd been in Toscano, burying myself in books.
Were you pregnant during the hunt for Kellerman Lords? Why didn't you tell me, Gabe?
My daughter. When I die, Danny, I want you to look after her. Swear to me you'll protect her, and if I want you to raise her.
What the hell? I can't. A kid?
She tore the lace print out of my hand.
Swear it, Dante. Swear.
Her lips peeled back from her teeth, her face dead pale and her eyes flashing with something I'd never seen in her before. I had to tell her.
Jaframel's alive, Gabe.
She froze. Her pupils dilated.
I know. The fire at your house. The shadow inside. With wings.
I lied. I'm sorry. I couldn't tell you, Gabe.
I was afraid of what you'd think of me. I'm afraid of what you think of me now.
You stupid bitch! Of course I knew. It doesn't matter. I need you now.
Tears stood out in her eyes. One fattened, slid down her cheek, leaving a shiny trail behind. If she'd slapped me, I would have been less surprised. I would have deserved it.
I'm here. As Anubis is my witness, Gabrielle, I'll do it. I'll do anything you ask.
She gazed into my eyes for a good 30 seconds, neither of us blinking. Then she held up the laser print.
Swear!
I saw it in her eyes. Gabe would not stop until Eddie's killers were dead.
Swear to me! On your name and the name of your god.
I swear to you, Gabrielle Spokarelli, on my name and on the name of my god Anubis, Lord of Death, I will help you hunt Eddie's killers. I will kill them myself if you're unable to. And for the rest of my life, I will look after your child and her children. I give my word.
The world rocked slightly underfoot. There. It was done. I owed her this much, and so much more. She'd been my friend, my only friend, since the academy. She had tried to help me protect Doreen. She had gone into the icy hell of Santino's lair with me to hunt down Doreen's killer, and nearly died herself. It never occurred to her to bow out of that hunt, any more than it occurred to me I might bow out of this one. Not only that, but she had done what I couldn't, and let Jason Monroe go. Performed the duty of a necromance at his bedside, for me. It had been an act of mercy, one I didn't deserve, and would never be able to repay.
Jaffra Mill's not gonna be happy with this.
On the heels of that thought came a second one.
I don't fucking care. Let him try to stop me. This is more important than the fucking devil.
Gabe slapped the laser print down. Tears trickled down her cheeks.
Good fucking deal. Now go away. Take the file with you. Come back tomorrow. Ready.
You better believe it.
Where's your daughter?
In a safe place.
Gabe's fingers curled around the counter, bloodless white. Her aura trembled. She was very close to losing control. Going Nova, her aura exploding with pain, loss, fury, abandonment. If that happened, she'd come at me, and while I was fairly sure I could fend her off without hurting her, I wasn't at all sure how Jaffra Mel would react if even a breath of what was happening got out to him.
Now get out. I'm not safe right now, Danny.
I know.
Hadn't I once burned my house to the ground after I'd lost someone? Someone once tried to tell me grief is passive. Whoever says that doesn't know women, and doesn't know necromances either. I took the file. I backed away from the counter. Sparks showered from my rings. I backed down the hall, out of sight of the kitchen. I turned around and left her house, my eyes blinded by tears. I flung myself out of her gates and straight into Jaffra Mel's arms. Leander didn't ask any questions. I chalked it up to tact. The accommodations were the Brewster Hotel on 9th Street. Cozy, expensive, and vulnerable enough to attack that I should have protested. I, however, did nothing of the sort. I merely banged through the hall and into the room Jaffra Mel indicated, dropped my bag containing its horrid new cargo, and fell onto the bed with my sword clutched in my hands, staring at the awful pale blue wallpaper with its tasteful pattern worked in gold spongy paint. Night had fallen over Saint City, and the night had knives, all of them pointed at me. Jaffra Mel lingered at the suite door with Leander and McKinley.
I'll get him settled.
Good.
I sensed the intensity of demon magic rising around the walls of the room. Wards and layers of shielding that would make this space physically almost invisible. Jaff stood for a little while in the doorway. Then he paced quietly over to the bed. He sat down on the side my back was presented to.
Don't touch me, don't fucking touch me, and for the sake of every god that ever was, if you try to manipulate or hurt me now, I swear I will try to kill you, I don't care what it takes. Please, Anubis, don't let him push me now.
He moved, stretching out and lying down. Power smoothed down my body, a soft, velvet caress. His fingers touched my hair, stroking evenly, soothing, pulling his fingers expertly through, massaging my scalp.
Just when I think he's gonna act like a bastard, he turns around and does something like this.
I needed his quiet, even touch. I needed the feel of his fingers in my hair, of his arms around me. For just one goddamn minute, I wanted to let down my defenses and let go of some of the awful, crushing, terrible burden of being myself.
But that would leave me vulnerable, wouldn't it? Gods, please. Please. I know how to suffer through a beating, but I can't take this. Don't let it be gentle. Please.
The mark on my shoulder went hot, sustained heat like a candle flame held close to the skin. Power poured into me, stroking along my flesh, sparkling like impulses between the gaps of dendrites and axons, an electricity that would have been painful and prickling if not for the fact that my body cried out for it, craved it. Bit by bit, Jaframel slid one arm under me. His other hand worked down to my neck, slid over my shoulder, skimmed down my tense, shaking arm. His fingers, blunter than mine but with unerring delicacy, slid between mine, loosened the grip on my sword. After a short struggle, he pushed the blade over the side of the bed. His arms tensed, drew me back into him. Still, he said nothing, his breath warm against my hair. His arms closed around me like chains, like a support. He simply held me. I convulsed with agonized guilt and grief. It took a long time for the sobs to jutter into little hitching broken gasps, my eyes streaming and my nose full, the mark on my shoulder hot through the ice, creeping up my veins from my fingertips and toes. The heat fought for me, pushed back the ice of numbness, Jaframel's arms tightening. His left hand, fingers threaded through mine of both hands, squeezed, reassuring, not hurtful. I don't know how long it took. Finally, I lay hot-eyed and limp in his arms, staring at the wallpaper and the edge of a chunky antique table that held plasticine-wrapped information sheets about how to call for room service and what to do in case of a fire or general catastrophe.
I wish one of them had a guide to deal with being a part demon whose loved ones are gonna die. Or maybe a few words about how to live with the utter shame of knowing you failed your friends when they've needed you the most. Or some explanation of what to do about the sudden feeling of empty loneliness so intense my entire body feels like a stranger's.
I'm all right.
I do not think so, beloved.
You never used to call me that.
What do you think Hidera means?
I don't know. You won't teach me anything.
My eyes drifted closed. The weariness swamped me, made my arms and legs turn to lead. Another kiss pressed onto the top of my head.
What does your friend want of you?
I told him. The darkness behind my eyelids was comforting again. I couldn't fight him when he was like this. Gods, all he had to do was be gentle with me, and I wouldn't be able to stop him from doing anything he wanted. I would even help him, if he was gentle. If he could just remember to tell me the truth. For a long few moments, he was silent.
She's my friend. Fuck Lucifer. I owe Gabe. I owe her everything. I don't care what you think. I'm...
Your debts are mine. Rest, Dante. Shock is still a danger for you.
You'll help me?
Ooh, ask him about the treasure, Danny. He seems to be in a talkative mood. Ask him what the key is and why all of a sudden everything's so different. Use this!
Another hot helping of shame boiled up under my breastbone. Even in the middle of a crisis, I was still trying to figure out how to manipulate him back, trying to play his game.
The sooner this is over, the sooner I may return to the task of seeing you alive through the demands the prince has placed on us. I worry it may be too much of a task, even for my skill.
I can't imagine a job that big.
Besides, you obey your honor, Dante. I can do no less. I am your fallen.
What does the Nankimel mean, Jaframel?
It means shield. It also means chained. Go to sleep, my curious. You are safe.
There wasn't enough sleep in the world to make me feel better, but I'd take what I could. Just for that moment, there in Jaff's arms.
What do you mean, gone?
I fixed McKinley with a steely glare the Hellesfront agent bore all too easily. He glanced at Jaframel, who said nothing. I finished tugging my boots on and pushed my damp hair back. I had awakened to a Saint City afternoon, which was not satisfactory. I've been a night creature all my human life, most scions are. During the day, I felt sluggish. Not slow enough to handicap me in a fight, but as if a veil of misty fatigue was drawn over the world. It was when night fell that I truly felt alive. Another unsatisfactory thing? Leander was gone.
Not in his room this morning. No luggage, not that he had much to begin with. I can comb the city and...
Not necessary.
Jaframel stood slim and dark, his hands clasped behind his back.
Perhaps he had an attack of good sense.
There it is again, that faint note of disdain. Why doesn't Jaframel like him?
Anubis et Erka. So what if he's human? I am too, remember?
I rose to my feet and slid the strap of my bag over my head, settling its weight properly against my hip. Rotated my shoulders to make sure my rig was all right. Closed my left hand over my sword.
I swear, you're as bad as a normal. Always thinking that a human can't be good enough for anything. Just like normals think all Sais are mind stealers.
I stalked between them toward the door of the suite. Jaframel fell into step behind me. McKinley did nothing.
Thank the gods he's staying behind.
I felt Jaframel's eyes on me as I stalked through the familiar cold chem bath of a rainy Saint City early afternoon. I wanted to get to Gabe's quickly, so I hailed a hover cab at the corner of 15th and Pole, right at the edge of the tank district. The driver didn't look happy to find out his fare was a scion, but he'd descended and flipped the meter before seeing my tat. Jaframel gave the driver Gabe's address. The unsteady flutter of my stomach as the hover cab rose into the sky intensified as I studied Jaframel's profile. He stared straight ahead, laser green eyes burning intently, as if they intended to slice through the Placilica barrier between us and the driver, out through the front bubble and cut the sky with a sword of light.
Jaff?
Mm-hmm.
His eyes turned to me.
Can I ask you something?
My left hand eased on my katana.
Gods protect me from your questions, my curious. Ask.
Did he just smile?
If he did, it was a fleeting expression. Moving over his face so quickly, even my demon-sharp eyes barely caught it.
No time like the present. Since you won't explain anything else, I might as well ask for the moon.
Why did you fall?
I expected him to turn the question aside, refuse to answer it. He would always make some ironic reply before, or simply, gently, refuse to tell me anything of Anankimel. He would only talk about things that had happened since I'd met him, and even some of those he wouldn't speak about.
As if he'd been born the day he showed up at my door.
I never knew dissatisfaction before I met you, Hedera.
Today, he cocked his head, considered the question.
I lived for countless ages as the prince's right hand and felt no guilt or shame at what I did. I still do not. Then, the prince set me to fetch a human woman and use her in a game that would end with the created androgyne under his hand. I found myself in the presence of a creature I could not predict for the first time in my life. I did not understand her, but knew her in a way that seemed deeper than even my kinship with my own kind. And thus, my dissatisfaction.
Dissatisfaction?
I fell through love of you, Hedera. It's simple enough, even with your gift for complicating matters. I don't want your fear of me. I've never wanted you to fear me.
He looked as if he would say more, but ended up shutting his mouth and shaking his head slightly, as if mocking himself for what he couldn't say.
I don't want to be afraid of you, but you make it so goddamn hard, Jaff. All you have to do is talk to me.
I can think of nothing else I would rather do.
His eyes held mine in a cage of emerald light.
I cherish my time with you.
That made my heart flip and start to pound.
All right, Jeff. One more try. One more chance.
What aren't you telling me?
My fingers tightened on the scabbard. A long pause.
Like calls to like. I am a killer, Dante. It is what I am.
So, by extension, that's what I am. That wasn't what I meant. I wanted you to talk to me about Eve.
I don't kill without cause.
My eyes dropped away from his, to the slender shape of the katana, Fudoshin.
This sword loves battle.
Jado lived in Saint City. I wanted to ask him about this sword.
Yeah, sure, like I have so much free time.
Anyway, a killer's not all you are. If it was, I'd be dead too, right? The hover cab landed. Jeff paid the cab driver. I wondered, not for the first time.
So, where does all the money come from?
Then again, Lucifer had paid me too. Cash was no problem to demons. Some magi even said they'd invented the stuff. It certainly made sense, given money's seductive nature and the chaos it could create. I decided to push a little more.
So what's this key, and what's going on that's changed everything?
He didn't reply for a few moments.
Later, my curious. When we are finished with your necromance friend.
I folded my arms, my sword a heavy weight in my left hand.
Jeff?
More questions?
Just a request. Quit being a bully. Stop keeping me in the dark.
His mouth pulled down at both corners. But I'd already turned on my heel and dropped my arms, heading down Trivisadero, just like I always used to do.
How about that? I think I finally got the last word in.
I blinked and cast around, vaguely troubled. If I hadn't been so bloody distracted, I would have noticed it right away. As it was, it took me a few seconds before I realized why I was disoriented. Gabe's front gate was slightly open. Not only that, but the shields on her property line were torn, bleeding trickles of energy into the early afternoon. I would have gone first, being accustomed to taking point on any job. It was a habit 30-odd years in the making and difficult to shake. Jaffermel, however, grabbed my arm in an iron grip that stopped just short of pain and gave me to understand with a single vehement emerald look that he was going first. And if I didn't want an argument, I would be well advised to just let him. I was so badly shaken, I did. I followed him, my thumb pressing against the katana's guard, right hand clamped around the hilt. I suppose I should have drawn a plas gun, but I was operating on instinct. A blade is the weapon I find most comforting. Give me a sword and some open ground, a clear enemy in front of me, and I know what to do.
It's just everything else in my life that confuses me now.
Gallows humor, meant to take the edge off my nervousness, but failing miserably. My mind turned curiously blank as I followed Jaffermel's black coat and inky head. He stepped through Gabe's gate, soundless, and the bleeding shields on her property line flushed red and began to fizz. I calmed the restive layers of energy with a mental touch, deftly binding together holes ripped in the shielding.
Strange. There's no sense of personality behind the rips and holes.
If another scion had cracked the shields, there would be a distinct stamp, a flavor to the rents. Something I could track no matter how good the other scion was. That was part of the trouble with the use of power. It was so unutterably personal. A bounty hunter like me developed a set of psychic muscles and sensitivities perfectly suited to tracking. We had to. It was how we did our jobs. I thought like a bounty hunter, seeing the world as a tangle of connections, some chance, some not, that if pursued systematically with a healthy dose of instinct would lead me to the person or piece of information I wanted. Nobody, especially anybody who has done something to make someone like me hunt them, manages to get through life without randomly bumping into something or spilling some energy into the ether. Everybody fucks up, sooner or later. And fuck-ups are mostly what a bounty hunter snags on.
But there's no flavor to these rips and tears.
Jaffermel crossed the gravel walkways of the garden. The house shields were still intact, vibrating with distress of a peculiarly remote kind. I would have thinned my shields to try and reach for Gabe. After all, we shared magic and deeper bonds. But the mark on my shoulder clamped down with fearful pressure. I realized Jaffermel's aura had hardened into a demon-tough shield around me, on top of my regular shielding. That was something I hadn't expected he could do. And I looked around the weedy garden with my heart in my mouth. Tension brushed my skin with thousands of delicately scraping pins, and copper filled my mouth. I felt alive. We found her around the back of the house, in the garden near the back wall Eddie had used for his more useful but less happy plants. Aconite, Whorehound, Belladonna, Poison Sumac, for repellent spells and treating slag fever, Fireweed 12, Wormwood, Castor, Meadow Saffron, Foxglove, Hellebore, you name it. All the Datura had been grubbed up, leaving a rain-softened hole in the dirt, and that was puzzling.
If Eddie died 10 days ago, why is his garden weedy? And where's the Datura gone?
Go to the front of the house.
I pushed past him. He caught my left arm gently.
Dante, you do not wish to see this. Please.
I looked, and I saw. It was no use. All the good-intentioned wanting to protect me in the world couldn't have stopped me from looking. Gabe lay tangled in a young hemlock. She bent back as if doing an enthusiastic full-wheel pose for a gymnasia illustration. Except for the bloody holes in her dark shirt and jeans, I tasted the fading tang of what we call foxfire. The false glow of nerves slowly dying.
At least 6 hours, if not more.
The ground around her was chewed with bullets. White underbark and broken green things glaring through the rainy day. Mist had collected on her face. The angle of her jaw upflung. Her hair a hanging skein of gray and black silk. Her feet were bare and very white. Her sword, blackened and twisted with her death, spilled out of her right hand. Her eyes were closed, and except for the bloody hole in her left cheek where a bullet had ripped through the flesh and shattered teeth, she looked peaceful. My pulse beat a padded drum in my ears. The click sounded in my brain. I looked at her feet, down at the gravel path, glanced back toward the house.
She had to have come over the lawn, barefoot and in a hell of a hurry. Why?
The part of me that had seen so many murder scenes jolted into operation like an old-fashioned gear wheel. It slid into place evenly, and I thought quite clearly.
You're gonna feel this soon. Before you do, you need to think. Think, Danny. Think!
I examined the angle of the bullets, where they had torn through plants and dug furrows in the wet earth. The smell of death rose with the perfume of fresh green garden, newly churned dirt. The computer deck inside my head took over, calculated angles and wounds, came up with an answer. I looked over my right shoulder, up over the wall at a point some 20 feet above. There was a rooftop there, just right for a projectile assault rifle.
Why is she still lying here? That much hot lead whizzing through the air? Someone should have called the cops, heard something, done something, especially in this neighborhood.
I was a necromance, with a fresh body.
But if I go into death now, I might not come out.
I was too tired, too distracted, and too goddamn upset. To top it all off, Jaffra Mel would have to question Gabe. He might not know the right questions to ask to elicit the underlying logic of what had happened.
There are rules to questioning the dead. Rules he might not know any more than I know the rules of demon etiquette.
More than that. Something deep and colored a smoking red in me rose in revolt at the thought of using Gabe's body as a focus. She had gone into death. Into the halls she'd walked so often before, and into the clear, rational light of what comes next. If there was any justice in the world. She was with Eddie now. I can't pull her away from that.
Admit it, Danny. You're afraid of facing her after you failed her again.
A litany of my life's failures rose before me. All the dead I'd loved.
Rowana, Louis, Doreen, Jace, Eddie.
And now a new name to add to that long string.
Gabe.
A long, despairing scream rose inside my chest, was locked away by an iron hand descending on my heart and squeezing, its bony fingers sinking into warm flesh and spreading the cold of stone. Cold, like the gray, fuzzy chill of shock, only deeper. This was a killing cold. Ice to be polished. Sharp as my katana and deadly as the demon standing beside me.
Dante, I am sorry.
My mouth worked silently for a moment. I considered screaming. Then my jaw shut. My right hand cramped once, viciously around the hilt of my katana. Released, I shoved the sword into the loop on my rig. Looked at the statue of Gabe's body.
Gone.
Gone.
Failed again.
The knife came out of its sheath. Jaframel cast me a measuring look as if weighing whether I would use it on him. I set it against the flesh of my palm and ripped down in one unsteady movement, dropping the blade now smoking with black demon blood. I lifted my hand, made a fist. Black blood dripped between my fingers, squeezed so hard I heard my own bones creak. This I swear on my blood. I will find whoever is responsible for this, Gabe. And I won't just kill them. I'm going to erase them. I swear to every god that ever was, I will make them pay.
Dante!
Jaframel grabbed my hand, a hot pulse of power sealing the wound even more quickly than welling black demon blood. I blinked at him.
Gods, does he sound frightened? I've never heard that before.
Don't worry. That was just a promise.
Am I in shock? I don't feel it. I feel like I'm thinking clearly for the first fucking time in a long time.
He studied me.
I am sorry.
His eyes measured me, as if he wanted to express more than sorrow. As if there was something else he wanted to say. I doubted there was anything in all the languages he knew that would suffice. I pulled my hand away from his, bent to scoop up my knife, approached her body. The air steamed around me, heat bleeding out from a demon metabolism, struggling to cope with the killing cold creeping into my chest. I bent carefully, dug in her right-hand jeans pocket. Her dat band was blinking.
Why hadn't aid hovers been dispatched from the central AI well as soon as her dad band's pulse monitor figured out her heart wasn't working?
A Cetayeen with an aid unit might have been able to help her.
No, with that much lead in her, especially in her chest, she'd probably bled out in seconds. Still, why isn't there a cadre of cops here with a reader examining the scene?
A rectangle of lace print paper crinkled under my fingers as I drew it out. Gabe's daughter grinned up at me, the edges of the glossy paper wrinkled with blood. I tucked the picture securely in my bag, reached up to push a strand of wet, heavy hair out of her face. My fingertip slid over her emerald, dead and lifeless now. The tat that would never shift to answer mine again. My cheek burned, though her emerald was dark. A slight buzz sparked between the gem and my fingertip.
An EMP? Of course. They trigger an electromagnetic pulse, and everyone's so busy trying to get their holovids reprogrammed, they don't notice a necromancer's murder. But what about the AI well? Her pulse monitor would have sent distress signals every half second. Unless it was a focused EMP pulse that would reset the hard code.
I touched the dat band with one finger. It flushed red.
Hard code wiped.
It was about as useless as plain plasilica now.
A focused EMP pulse. Copper hegemony hardware. Which means I am dealing with someone very serious about killing her for some reason. Someone who has the funding and hardware to get away with triggering an EMP pulse within the borders of the city's hover zones. I have to go inside.
I straightened, my fingers leaving Gabe's cold, motionless wrist reluctantly.
We must be quick. Sirens.
In a city this size, of course there's sirens.
But it was useless. He had some way of knowing the cops were finally coming. Hours too late.
Why? Why are they coming now?
I took one last long, lingering look at Gabe's body. Fixed every line, every curve, every drop of blood in my magi-trained memory. I turned on my heel and stalked away. Jaframel fell into step behind me. The pressure of his attention wrapping around me helped to keep the scream inside. I couldn't let it out while the velvet fingers of his aura stroked my skin, the mark on my left shoulder burning deeper and deeper into my flesh. Gabe's house shields quivered. They would eventually lose power and become no more than shadows, holding the psychic impressions of her family, generation upon generation of necromancers and cops. But since her family had been shielding this house for a very long time, it might well take hundreds of years for the power to fade. The back door was unlocked and open, and I peered in. This door gave into the kitchen, and I could see smashed plates and appliances.
Someone tossed the hell out of Gabe's beautiful, expensive, comfortable kitchen.
My boots ground on broken ceramic and plasterglass as I picked my way inside. Jaframel laid a hand on my shoulder.
I do not like this.
Sage? And salt? Someone's been cleaning up in here, erasing psychic traces.
Her shields aren't torn here. It was someone she knew. Someone who didn't have to break in.
Which pretty much rules out demon involvement.
I was fairly sure this had nothing to do with Lucifer, which was a huge bloody relief.
Finally, something the Prince of Hell didn't control.
The thought of Lucifer turned my stomach over hard. I went through the hall. Even the pictures had been torn down. Some yanked out of their frames. The first floor living room, where Gabe and Eddie had done their meditating and had their altars, was a shambles. Gabe's exquisitely painted ceramic statue of Greca Persephonia lay smashed on the floor, Persephonia's sad flat eyes gazing up thoughtfully at the ceiling. The tang of sage was very thick here, nose-stinging, overpowering Gabe's kiffy. I made my way to the stairs, counted up to the seventh one, and knelt below it. My fingers ran along the bottom of the wooden lip of the seventh step.
Dante, they are drawing closer. Do you wish to be seen here?
I ignored him. My fingers found the slight groove, pressed with a small tingle of power along my nails, and the non-magical lock yielded. The top of the step came away in my hands. There, in the hidey hole, were four sheets of heavy-duty paper with Skinlin notations. Snatches of musical notes, ancient Judic symbols, and complicated chemistry equations. There were also four vials of a white, grainy substance. Otherwise, the hole was empty and suspiciously clean. Gabe must have hoped I'd find this, or hoped nobody else would. I smelled sage mixing with the heady spice of kiffy and a faint tang of synth hash smoke.
She's been smoking. Probably not around the kid. And where exactly is Gabe's daughter? Has she been kidnapped? In a safe place, Gabe said. I hope the hell the place is safe enough.
I scooped everything up. Let's go.